Don't be alarmed. The quasi-shimmering light before you is a trans-dimensional gateway to other worlds, other voices, other thoughts, and other realities. Up feels like down, and down feels like the number 7 on a Wednesday morning. Don't worry. That quivering, blood-boiling sensation under your eyebrows is all a part of the charm. Welcome to the PCC Multiverse.
And we're back with another episode of the PCC Multiverse. This is Gerald Glassford coming right back at you here from the Pop Culture Cosmos, Inside Sports Fantasy Football, Game Source, and, of course, the Lakers Fast Break. We truly appreciate everyone out there listening to all of our great shows. And if you can, please give us that magical 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, if you could like, share, subscribe, please subscribe today to get the latest notifications on when we go live on the air with the latest Pop Culture Cosmos, PCC Multiverse, Inside Sports Fantasy Football, State of Pro Wrestling, and more. All the things that we do for you, plus a big shout out to all the radio stations around the world that play us, of course, right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. But it wouldn't be a PCC Multiverse without my good friend, indeed. She is the D&D queen, party girl of Vampires and Vitae, also as well, Wild Beyond the Witchlight, so much more. It is my good friend. It is Melinda Barkhouse Ross. And Melinda, great to have you here, my friend. Looking forward to another fascinating deep dive into the world of pop culture.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you ask for a later start time one time, and now all of a sudden you're a party girl. I mean, I just feel like that's not fair.
I'll be a party guy. I'm up late every night, so you can say that. Okay, fair enough. All right.
I tease because I love. Okay, so what's up? Okay. What are we doing today?
Well, you know what's up first and foremost. A big congratulations to our good friends and supporters of all the things that we've done over the years here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. Retro City Games with their brand new second store. They said, you know what? We talked about this on the show where they said, you know what? We are too good for Town Square, Las Vegas. We said, okay, we're going to go a block up the street. Literally a block up Las Vegas Boulevard at Las Vegas Boulevard Premium Outlet South, right there for you. So that's Las Vegas Boulevard Premium Outlet South. I do have it here. Some of the pictures I put right there for you, right there. Ooh. It is grand opening was 2 hours ago, or actually 3. Oh. I was looking at that. Wow. So I got a ton of stuff there for you, right there. There's my daughters. They don't know Nice. They're on. Camera, yes.
Surprise,
yes.
Oh, man, I miss Guitar Hero. I had the full band set up at one time.
They got a ton of stuff there. So yes, I just cannot be more excited about our good friends at Retro City Games. They have a second store once again. It is at Las Vegas Premium Outlet South, right on Las Vegas Boulevard. Just minutes, okay. If you hit all the lights, you would be at the New York within about 3 minutes.
I'll just say that. Mm.
So again, though, who hits all the lights, right? So it's about 10 minutes. Yeah. So it's just straight down Las Vegas Boulevard. There's absolutely no excuse. So please go ahead and check out what they're doing today at Retro City Games, Las Vegas Boulevard Premium South Outlets. And of course, their main store in Henderson as well. Man, they've got just a ton of stuff. A ton of stuff at Retro City Games. I mean, if you are a retro gaming freak, there's no better place to go than Retro City Games. But Melinda, it is great to have you here, ready to do the deep dive into everything pop culture can.
Uh-huh.
EDC.
Yeah.
Upfront.
Mm-hmm.
Renewals.
Crazy renewals.
If.
Yeah.
My gosh, a lot to talk about here in pop culture. That doesn't even include anything like video game is. GTA 6. Looks
oh,
like
yeah,
fall
right.
2025 might be.
They're ballparking it for that anyway.
For now, 2K says that. Yeah. We'll see. And then Wall Street Journal just dropped a report today that we're going to see Call of Duty Black Ops 6 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Day and date, Xbox Games Pass, even though there were rumors last week that, people up in the hierarchy at Microsoft said they didn't want Call of Duty on Xbox Games Pass. It looks like that may happen. So, very interesting. Very interesting to be a part of pop culture. Where do you want to go first, my friend? Do you want to go to Con? Do you want to go to EDC?
Well, yeah, let's start at EDC, I think. I think that's a good start, good starting spot for today.
Well, I mean, what, 150,000 people will be there? It's at the Las Vegas racetrack here every weekend that it happens each year. It's just amazing. For myself, I don't know how. I mean, I never really asked you this because I told you I was, I think I did tell you once that I was really kind of into electronic music at one point in time, early 2000s, just some tremendous groups that I really, really enjoyed through those years. And it has evolved into one of the major concerts or collection of groups, artists, things of that nature over the course of a, what, 2 or 3 day period. It is the Electronic Daisy Carnival here in Las Vegas. Over 150,000 people. Wouldn't you know, right on cue, we hit our first 100-degree day today.
Yep. Yeah,
it's right on cue. So people, if you're going out there, stay hydrated and lots of sunscreen. But your thoughts, my friend, this is the premier event for all of electronic music, a art form and a music form vastly underrated and underappreciated, but for those who like to dance, there is nothing better.
Yeah, and 150,000 people coming to Las Vegas said, yeah, we like to dance. Mm-hmm. It really is one of those, in a year, it's one of those banner events that seems to happen all the time. A lot of people talk about it and talk about it favorably, which is difficult to do in Las Vegas. Us jaded locals can be hard to impress sometimes, but EDC manages to do it every single year, it seems. And I know it's popular because I was looking for hotel rooms for some friends who were coming to town this weekend. And the hotel that would cost, let's just say, $120 a night. Let's just say. I looked it up for this weekend and it would have been over $1,200 for one night. Same hotel. Just because of EDC.
Don't forget those fabulous resort fees.
Oh my gosh, yeah, we got to add those on there. And what was it that I just heard? One of the casinos is upgrading their parking garage, and everybody was like, oh God, now it's going to be another pay-to-park thing. It's not the case. They're going to keep it free. So I can't remember which hotel it was, but...
Got to let me know, because I remember when I used to frequent on a daily basis the Las Vegas Strip, and just to walk the Strip each and every night, because I thought it was really good exercise, helped to de-stress from my work and all that. And I used to know exactly where the free parking was. Like, you go right the milk to the Strip, Casino Royale, you park in there. There was actually some good places to go and all that. And yeah, now things have changed. And now everything, like you said, on the Strip is pay to park. It was like, oh, so yeah, I have to know. Like when I went to the Las Vegas Golden Knights game, I had to go ahead and park down at the Oyo Hotel. Free parking there still, everyone. But, you know, I digress. But it is, of course, the EDC, Electric Daisy Carnival. Again, it is a expression of electronic music and dance. And I just really am just grateful to see it. Yes, I know there's going to be a ton of homegrown herbs, for lack of a better term, as far as the smell and the fragrance and the aroma. Yes, there will be a lot of that. You got to be prepared. But again, the music, I really think, for someone who really at the beginning of the century really enjoyed Crystal Method, Chemical Brothers, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Just that's one of my bucket list things I got to go ahead and do before I die.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's right here, and we don't have to pay $1,200 a night for a hotel. So.
You just have to go ahead and bear through the traffic on that end. See, that's the great thing about the Las Vegas Speedway, because it is down on the interstate and it is not near the strip, so people on the strip are not inconvenienced by what goes on at the raceway. So
right, yeah,
yeah. But I'm telling you what, though, EDC, if you are interested in checking it out, it is going to be available all over the place. There's going to be live showcasings all over the place on YouTube, Facebook, social media. You know EDC is going to be rocking. So let me know your thoughts. EDC 2024. Are you headed out there or are you really into electronic music? Please let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. Well, my friend, also going on this weekend, heading into the box office because we are now, I don't want to say knee deep into it yet, because I think that happens on Memorial Day weekend when Garfield and Mad Max Furiosa actually comes out
right. And
Furiosa is getting some really good reviews, just to let everybody know out there.
Good.
Maybe it's because it's Chris Hemsworth's new nose in the picture. I don't know. It's pretty big, you know. People are making a big deal about last year about just other noses that were in play with other actors and whatnot, and Chris Hemsworth's nose. Nobody's making a big deal about that, but need I digress. It is Mad Max Furiosa, so it is getting some great reviews. I want to ask you this, though. If The Imaginary Friend is coming out this weekend to theaters, John Krasinski chose to do this film instead of A Quiet Place Day One. He's executive producing it, I think, but he did not choose to direct that film. Do you think he made a mistake by doing that? Because if it's coming out this weekend, it is still projected to do right around $40 million domestically and maybe about $80 to $100 million worldwide, but it is coming out to lukewarm to below average reviews. IGN just gave it a 4. And among other sites, its Metacritic is not that high. Your thoughts on if Imaginary Friend can least resonate with younger audiences, since it looks like it probably won't resonate with older ones?
Yeah, I think that's what they're going for. And I think that there's a certain type of actor that is compelled to make child entertainment when they have children. And I mean, that's what has happened with John Krasinski and Emily Blunt, right? They've got kids now. So I can see him suddenly being interested in taking on those kinds of projects. I think it makes sense eventually for it to happen. Whether or not it makes money, I can't really, you know, I don't really have a handle on that one, but I think it is something that a lot of actors do eventually decide they want to do just because they have kids. So I think it's an easier visualization of how the movies are going to be taken and all of that kind of stuff. And plus, who wouldn't want to have an opportunity to play something that their kids are going to be kind of obsessed with for a little while? That would be fun.
I hope so. I hope it'll resonate, because it's about time we had new evolutions in children's films. Because it seems to be regurgitation of Despicable Me 4 should dominate the box office here a little bit. Garfield, I don't know. And that's a question we may be able to ask here next week.
Right.
Because Garfield, I do want you to think about that one as far as Garfield translating to a 2024 audience. I'm not convinced that it will or if it might. So we'll have to see on that one. But if Imaginary Friend debuts in theaters with the voice of Steve Carell, it stars Ryan Reynolds, John Krasinski. They're both in the picture with themselves, and then of course Steve Carell as the imaginary if character, plus a whole bunch of other characters as well. So I'm hoping it will resonate, but the advanced word has not been kind, in fact, to all the movies that are coming out this weekend. Back to Black, which is the Amy Winehouse pick, and The Strangers Chapter One. Because I think it was with The Strangers, it's like they're going to do a chapter two here in a couple months. I don't know. There's a chapter three, or is there I don't know. Yeah. They may need to end it after chapter one because of all the bad reviews that it's getting. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
Again, it looks like if will probably dominate the box office, but how well it will resonate, we'll wait and see, my friend.
Yeah. I'm with you on all of that. That's perfectly logical.
So what are your thoughts out there on if it will do well at the box office? You knew I just had to say something like that. please let us know, popculturecosmos@yahoo.com. For the latest news and information, analysis and opinions on the Los Angeles Lakers and the NBA, check out the Lakers Fast Break podcast today on wherever you get your podcasts. Well, we're back with the show. It's Melinda Barkhouse-Ross and me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks again for watching, listening. Truly appreciate it. Melinda, what is going on with Vampires and Vitae? Because I've got a relation to vampires that I want to go ahead and express to you as soon as you're done, letting everyone know what's going on with the V&V.
Well, so we are getting ready to record on Sunday. It's also Roger's birthday, so I'm not entirely sure how much of actual gameplay we're going to get to versus just having an opportunity to celebrate one of our friends at the table. Well,
happy birthday to Roger, my old friend.
Yeah,
the guy who I tormented frequently on D&D.
True story. But the birthday is actually today, but we're kind of celebrating on Sunday. So,
okay.
So anyway, so we got to get that coming up on Sunday. But in terms of story, the wedding has happened now, and Rose had an opinion about the way that she was leaving things with Benoit and wanted to make sure that Benoit did not forget who the first and best version is. I'll just leave it at that. We're getting ready to have some pretty serious stuff get shaken up on us here in the next little bit. It's been a little bit too calm, a little too relaxed lately on Vampires and Vitae. So I have a feeling that's coming to an end very soon.
Well, I'm wishing the best for you guys, but please go ahead and follow V&V today wherever you get your podcast. Vampires and Vitae, the best storytelling podcast out there, bar none. There you go. But my friend, speaking of vampires, have you noticed the interest which Interview with the Vampire? We talked about earlier this year how much in love I was with Tokyo Vice Season 2.
Yes.
Interview with a Vampire on AMC has going through their Season 2, and it has turned out really well. So well that it is garnering a lot of critical acclaim as well. Your thoughts on Interview with a Vampire? Is it a blood-sucking good time?
I think it is. And I know there are a lot of people out there who are like, they changed so much of the story. I don't know that I can get behind that. Listen, they changed all of that story while Anne was still alive and she was part of the writing room and she was there and she helped to make all of those decisions. So if the rewrites and the adjustments that they made to the story were good enough for Anne Rice, then they're going to be good enough for me to be able to handle and watch. I think that the actors that they have in the show are fantastic. I can't remember the actor's name, but the gentleman who plays Lestat is fantastic. I mean, Tom Cruise will always be Lestat, but this guy has given Tom a run for his money, truly. So if you haven't given Interview with a Vampire your time, you definitely should. It's so good, and it's dark where it needs to be dark. It's funny where it should be funny. It's full of dark humor, which I love. It's definitely one of those shows that I 10 out of 10 recommend to people.
So it is an adaptation, not just of the book, but also the previous films. And we've seen adaptations on some occasions really do well. Talked about in the past, The Last of Us, really good adaptation. Shogun.
Yeah.
Really, really good adaptation. And we'll talk about Shogun here in a second because there's some news on that one. But your thoughts on why these adaptations, on a lot of occasions, three-body problem have gotten a lot better?
Well, I think that enough people, and perhaps this could be a little bit of the Marvel effect. I just broke my pen top. Anyway, a little bit of the Marvel effect where you have... you have this great example of writers and producers and directors and actors who made the decision to stay true to the source material. And I think that there are people who noticed that. And I think that that's why some of these adaptations are working so well these days. And I think it's because they've realized that the story is already written in a way that people love. So if we're going to adapt this to another medium, we need to find a way to be able to work around the limits of the new medium, but at the same time, stay faithful to the story and the things that people love. And I think that finally, producers, writers, directors, actors, Hollywood listened to the people and they're like, okay, we won't mess with it that much.
And that's good, because
yeah, I think that's why the adaptations are working so well.
It has worked very well. I'm very surprised about how it is done so well. I mean, it was something that came out last season. And it was just like, it's good. People talked about it. And then it kind of just faded into, you know, whatever, not just another show syndrome for AMC. Right. But then all of a sudden this season, it started to, you started to hear it. You started to see more articles. You started to see things with Interview with a Vampire that is getting the notoriety. And I figured you, as our vampire expert, would, well, yeah, not that you've actually talked or met to any vampires lately. Or,
right.
You know, I'd have to check Robbie's neck just to make sure. But you, as a vampire aficionado, thought you would be getting more on board with this. Because, again, it sounds like you were apprehensive at first, but if you said it's good for Anne Rice, or was for Anne Rice, it's good enough for everybody else.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that a lot of people forget, is that Anne was involved in that adaptation and, you know, pushing the storyline ahead a little bit. So, you know, you had Louis as more of a product of the 1920s than of like the, I think it was the 1880s, maybe earlier than that, probably earlier than that.
Earlier
now that I
than
think
that.
About it. Yeah. But anyway, I think that the changes that they made were good changes. And interesting changes and changes that help to add a little bit more dimension to some parts of the story. I think season two is starting to get the notoriety and starting to get people talking because it's the part of the vampire story that everybody loves. It's, you know, you get introduced to the theater of vampires and you get to see them be as vampiric as they dare to be, you know, in private. And I think that that's a part of those vampire stories that people tend to gravitate towards and really want to see. And it sounds like, because I haven't watched any of season two yet, I think that it's lending itself very well to those people who just enjoy those kinds of darker stories with perhaps more morally gray characters than ones who are clearly good or clearly bad.
Okay. Being in the series, it allows you to flesh that out more, which in some cases is advantageous to the source material and in how you adapt it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the patience that they've used in season one to tell the story and unravel the story as you were going along, I thought that it was really well done. They kept the right amount of tension as you were kind of flipping back and forth between Louis telling the story and what was actually happening in the apartment and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. I thought that it was really well done and I think that they handled it very well.
Okay. Well, again, it is season two of Interview with a Vampire. So please give it a shout out if you have a chance, because it is something that I think a lot of people are talking about how good it is shaping out to be. I mean, we talked earlier this year about how good Tokyo Vice was evolving into in season two. It looks like Interview with a Vampire is doing the same. So please let us know your thoughts on Interview with a Vampire on AMC. Is it a blood-sucking good time? Let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. You know I just got to do that Silence the Lambs thing right around time, you know, what's
every single time. Yeah, yes, single absolutely time be disappointed if it didn't happen, to be honest.
You could be worse. I could have said I want to suck your blood.
That's true.
That was cheesy. Yeah, absolutely. But it is, of course, Pop Culture Cosmos. Before we hit the break, my friend, I did want to discuss some interesting things that were done. Upfronts were this week for many outlets, and there was a ton of news from it, from various outlets, from whether it's talking about Disney, Comcast, you know, for NBC, Peacock, and the like, Disney, of course, Hulu, talked about Netflix, all the major entities, WB, Paramount, all are talking about good stuff coming on the way, and started mapping that out, not only for this year, but in future years on when they go ahead and want to put out their major projects. So you started to see a lot of that. But the thing that kind of interested me the most was the success that Shogun had on FX, Hulu, and Disney Plus, because this earned more acclaim during the time that it was out than probably anything I've seen this year. I know it didn't, for me, and I think for you as well, didn't end on the greatest of notes.
Right.
But there is a chance to go ahead and extend its future because Hiroyuki Sanada signed on for additional seasons, and it looks like Shogun may be in the works for a season 2 and 3. My question to you, how is that possible when the book was already finished?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have an answer for you. That's the one that concerns me, because the show was so well received and it was so beloved by everyone who watched it.
And we talked about an adaptation that adapted the book, again, outside the last chapter, really well.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know where it's going to go from here.
Clean slate.
But I desperately hope that it remains as good as it has been. Please don't ruin it. Please don't make me say, just watch season 1. That's all you need to know. I just don't want to have to say that to people.
Season 1, the first 9 episodes. And we'll just.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, I don't know where, you know, they're going to do about Anna Sawai, because, you know, she killed it.
Oh my Medical. Gosh. Yes. So
and,
good.
And now, and, but spoilers, she can't be in there going forward. So I don't know how you're
going
to go ahead.
Going on.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I just, they're, it's greed, because they're saying, hey, we made a lot of money off this and got a lot of people to watch it. So we're going to go ahead and create and keep creating. Now, they kind of did give themselves an out, because Blackthorn, they did show in that episode 10, which I do not like much at all. And as an older, dying on his deathbed type deal, as an old man. So I'm sure that you were probably going to get the actor who played Blackthorn involved in this too as well. And you did, or rumors already have Hiroyuki Sanada signing on for more. They may show the actual battles that they had bait and switch promoted you in the first place, because that's what they intended or wanted you to intend to believe heading into this series. So they may actually show you the battles. So, okay. All right. I'm with it. I'm going to give it a shot, but yeah, the concern level is there. Melinda, it's there indeed.
Yeah, it really is. Anytime you run out of the source material, I mean, look what happened with Game of Thrones. Like, that show did not deserve that.
No, it didn't.
It really didn't. And, you know, you can blame the fact that, you know, the two guys went off and did some Star Wars stuff. And by the time they signed that contract, they were ready to go. And they just didn't care what happened with Game of Thrones anymore. You can give it any kind of excuse that you want, but let's just hope that that same kind of treatment doesn't take part here, because I really liked the first season. I really did.
So we will know, hopefully in the not too distant future, if we're getting 1 or 2 more additional seasons of Shogun, but it was a massive success. And of course, greed kicks in, and you know what? They're going to get more Shogun, which could be a great thing. We'll find out. 90% of it was absolutely brilliant and magnificent. So we could see more brilliance or concern when it comes to Shogun. So please let us know your thoughts. Are you interested in more Shogun? PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com.
What is Planet Cool Stuff? It's your ultimate destination for insightful exploration from the realm of pop culture. Delve into the world of movies, video games, toys, cartoons, and visit with one-of-a-kind creators, discover incredible places, and see historical artifacts. Whether it's a toy room tour or exploring the best of pop culture cinema, Planet Cool Stuff has got you covered. Planet Cool Stuff, exclusively on Jinx Esports TV Canada.
Well, 1.5 hour down, 1.5 hour to go here at the PCC Multiverse. It is Melinda Barkhouse-Ross and me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks so much again to all the stations worldwide that go ahead and play the PCC Multiverse and Pop Culture Cosmos. I do want to go ahead and give again a big shout out to the grand opening of our good friends at Retro City Games, Las Vegas Boulevard, Premium South Outlets. Please go ahead and check out their brand new spanking new store right there for you. Plus also as well, of course, their main store in Henderson. Melinda, you talked before the break about Game of Thrones, the showrunners.
Yes.
That, like you said, took cash to go to Star Wars and deal with other things. But one of the other things that they did after Game of Thrones was Three-Body Problem.
Yeah.
D.B. Weiss and David Benioff, I guess I'll say that. Okay. But they're the showrunners behind Game of Thrones. While you can blame them for how it ended, as we often do here on this show, Three-Body Problem season one was a success on Netflix. So much so that during the upfronts that were announced, and we'll talk about a little bit more of the upfronts here in a second, they were given that, well, they first off, they were already approved for more seasons, but Netflix just said, you know what, however long you need it, because they had already said they're going to probably, they wanted to do four seasons most likely, because that seems to be a Netflix thing.
Right.
But they also were told that you get as many episodes you want to finish it out after however many seasons that you do. So let's say it's four seasons. They'll just normal six or eight season order. They'll go ahead and they'll add a couple episodes if they need to go ahead and finish on out. That's a sign of confidence and faith. And the fact that, you know, they got them for $200 million. That kind of, you know, helps too.
Helps.
But
yeah.
Your thoughts on Three-Body Problem getting time now, guaranteed. Well, I don't say guaranteed, because they could actually, if it tanks in the second season, they could actually cancel it. But your thoughts on most likely Three-Body Problem finishing out in a way that the showrunners want to see, similar to what we see with Shogun, maybe taking something entirely from the book or away from the book at a whole new level?
Well, so my problem with Three-Body Problem is that I honestly didn't want to like the show because I'm still mad at what they did to Game of Thrones. I lived for Game of Thrones when that was at its peak. Anyway, so
you and Josh.
Yeah, like I loved it. It was the only show that I would purposely, and I know that the books were out. Okay, I know. So don't at me for that, but it was,
and he's
the
still
only
finishing
show
it any day now.
Yeah. Any day. We'll find out
any day
but,
now.
Like it was the only show that I would happily read spoilers for and then sit at home and watch the show, know what's coming and still being surprised at how they got there. Like I loved that show, and that last season was an abomination. So I really didn't want to like Three-Body Problem, but it turns out that I did really like Three-Body Problem. So, yeah, as they have the same deal that they were offered at HBO, it sounds like. You can have as many episodes as you want, as many seasons as you want, and here's, you know, a couple of blank checks. Go ahead and do what you need to do.
Well, they got $200 million themselves,
yeah,
initially to sign, yeah, with Netflix to do projects, which became Three-Body Problem.
Right. And then they get the same kind of offer that they had with HBO when they were doing Game of Thrones, and look at the mess that they made. So it's not necessarily that the cash means that the show is going to be good or that the showrunners are going to care about it. Maybe the $200 million that they got to stuff in their own pockets will mean that they care about it for the duration of the show. That would be a nice change for those two. But, you know, that's just how what I see. But I don't know if that's a good take or not. I don't really know about the inside of those kinds of things and those kinds of deals.
What's interesting, though, that House of the Dragon, you know, on the day or right around the same day that, you know, the extension for Three-Body Problem happens, House of the Dragon, and also as well with the Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power, they introduced their season two trailer for, I think, their August release date for them.
Yeah.
Conveniently, HBO drops the House of the Dragon season two, the second trailer.
Yeah.
For, yeah. Hmm. Funny how that coincidentally happens right around the time that both those things happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Go figure.
I think that's It's a go figure. It's coming, I think, June, I think, for release date on that.
Yeah, I don't think it's long.
June 16th, that's right. So yeah. I will say this, though, about Three Body Problem. Again, I thought it was really good. Kind of faded in the last couple episodes, especially with the special effects. Kind of, yeah, sure. Thought, cringe a little bit on the special effects there in the past couple episodes. But again, for the most part, it's pretty good watching. And I enjoyed it, especially the first part. It is not at the height of what we saw with Game of Thrones. I did not get into Game of Thrones until the last three seasons, I think. Really, I saw season one, saw Sean Bean do his obligatory get killed, and I thought, you know what? I'm a Sean Bean fan. I can't deal with this. Heard over the years how good it was, got back into it, thought it was really good. And then me and Josh, I remember when we came on the air after that last episode, and we were just ticked off.
Oh,
how
my
bad
gosh.
It was.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
We were so, you weren't on yet, but you, yeah, it was just so bad.
I'm pretty sure we talked about it still, even though I wasn't on the podcast yet.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure that was bad enough that I think we raged together about it for a little while.
Yes. I think we did. Yeah. So, but that being the case, again, here's another showrunner being given latitude to go ahead and extend beyond whatever the original property did, like we saw with Shogun. I understand your concern, especially with this. If you had a choice between Shogun or Three Body Problem getting the extension to the end of the series, whatever that may be for both of them, which one would you give the latitude to in this case?
I would stay with Shogun.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just a huge story with this incredible scope. And it's really interesting to watch them make all of those political moves. And to be completely selfish about it, I have used some of the great lines out of the show at LARP for Vampire LARP. Because, I mean, there's brilliant stuff, you know. A friend with ambition. Oh no, what is it? An ally with ambition is no true friend or something. Like, that's beautiful stuff. So good. Anyway, I could gush about it all day if you let me.
So, okay. I think that it is going to be something that it is going to have to be must watch. Three Body Problem and also Shogun. But you're right. Three Body Problem with the track record of the showrunners of Game of Thrones. I am not convinced they will basically stick the landing. Shogun didn't stick the landing, in my opinion. It sounds like it didn't stick the landing with you either. But
well, I mean, if the last episode doesn't make the entire season terrible.
No, but it,
you know, I think there was far more positives that came out of the season than negatives.
It was, like I told you, it was perfection.
Right.
90% of the way there. It's just that they didn't, that last episode was just, it went off in another, maybe because it was so close to the book, but it's just, it didn't portray itself well, I think, on screen. I think they should have made some changes to the storyline on how they got there. And I think that would have been better served. But again, that's something 90% of it is just fantastic. So same thing with Three Body Problem. 70-80% of what you see in Three Body Problem is compelling television. Don't let whatever 10 or 15% that may not be as good keep that from what you watching it and giving another shot when they come around with more seasons.
Right. Yeah. Okay. No, I agree.
Okay, well, that's fair. I'm glad we're in tune, so I'm just making sure. So, please let us know
your this one.
Exactly, for once.
Yeah,
for once. So, what are your thoughts out there on Three Body Problem and Shogun getting extra seasons and letting them finish out the story? At least right now, depending on you watching it, of course. Please let us know your thoughts. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. But there was more news coming out of the upfronts, including from the WB. I want to go ahead and touch on that first, because I know this is something that you wanted to go. In fact, you talked about this previously because of our fascination with Dune and how good Dune was. and how good Dune Part 2 was. We talked about Dune, the Sisterhood. I think that was going to be something that they were called. It was called Dune Sisterhood for a long time in production. Yeah. And we thought that's what was going to be the case. But it's been changed now to Dune Prophecy TV series. That's coming up later this year on Max and HBO. Your thoughts on this? It does still deal with the Sisterhood, the creation of the Sisterhood. Bene Gesserit and all that. And it's about set 10,000 years before Paul Atreides, I think, if you watch the trailer. So your thoughts about this, I mean, even though it's 10,000 years before Paul Atreides, it seems to look very similar to the Dune now. So it's like nothing has changed technologically in 10,000 years. Okay.
Hey man, If it ain't fixed, don't break it. No,
for 10,000 years, apparently
not. If it ain't
broke,
don't fix it. Yeah, because
you still have the spaceships that I think run by spice. You still have everybody looking the same. You still even have the shields that you could put up when you're doing the hand-to-hand combat. So, your thoughts on how excited you will be for a Dune Prophecy series coming up later this year on Max?
I am as excited for that as I am for the movie or the series, I can't remember right now which one off the top of my head we're getting, for the ballerinas for the John Wick stuff. I think that this exploration of these places that are traditionally female spaces in movies like this and shows like this and stories like this, it's very interesting. And I think that it shows a little bit of a different flavor, I suppose, is what I want to say. In terms of like just another lens that you can show the story through. And I think the more point of views you're able to explore within a story, I think the better off you are. So I think this prophecy show is going to be very interesting, and I can't wait to see how the Sisterhood was formed. I think it's going to be interesting as all get out.
Okay. All right. Well, that's, again, it's something I'm going to be interested in checking out as well. I wasn't really at first. I don't know what it was that just didn't endear me to it, but yet seeing Dune Part 2, and in fact, it's so weird because Dune Part 1, I really was not on board with Dune Part 1 as far as, it's okay, but then just knocked my socks off. I guess it's because I had such a bad taste in my mouth over the David Lynch Dune.
Sure.
I was thinking, all right, how can they really do this? But, you know, Dune Part 1 for us, one of the best movies of that year. Dune Part 2, one of the best movies. I'm just going to throw it out already. It's one of the best movies coming out that came out this year.
Right.
So seeing that, I have a feeling, just like I have for the Penguin series, that coming off the success of the Batman, I think that WB and Max will do a good job of translating that. It'll be on a smaller scale because it is on a television scale. It's on a streaming scale. It will still be something worth watching.
Yeah, I think that they're going to, because of sometimes, I think we talked about it before with the low budget horror movies, where sometimes the lack of budget inspires that creativity, and you're going to find interesting ways to tell a story that you would never have discovered if you did have gobs of cash hanging around. So I think it challenges the actors. I think it challenges the directors. I think it challenges, my gosh, the lighting crew, for heaven's sakes. I think it challenges everybody. And I think it makes for, you know, sometimes a much more interesting story just by having a lower budget.
I'll tell you what, though. I am excited to see what's going to go on with this series, but it is Dune Prophecy, not Dune Sisterhood. It is Dune Prophecy. So please let us know your thoughts on if you're going to check out the extension of Dune Prophecy, and if that will get you the itch even more for a Dune Messiah movie. Hopefully from Villeneuve will go ahead and do that, but we'll see. Of course, it is Dune Prophecy. Please let us know your thoughts. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. Retro City Games is the leader in retro gaming with the best collection of classic video games, consoles, accessories, toys, collectibles, Pokemon, and more. Stop by one of their great locations today in Henderson and at the Las Vegas South Premium Outlets, just minutes from the heart of the Las Vegas Strip. From Atari to Xbox, Nintendo to PlayStation, there's no better place to go in all of Las Vegas for your classic gaming fix than Retro City Games. My friend, still a few more minutes left before we head on out here at the PCC Multiverse. Looking forward to, again, a great weekend in pop culture. But before we head on out, I do want to go ahead and mention a little bit more about what's going on, because Con is taking place right now. We're not at EDC, and we're not on the south of France right now in Cannes.
Yeah, and we also don't get invited to Comic-Con in San Diego. I mean, all of those things are rude.
That's true. And CinemaCon, I still can't get into the end.
Right, yeah, what is going on there?
What is going on there?
Who do we have to write strongly worded letters to? And I mean, deliver them through snail mail. That'll really freak people out.
The Comic-Con and CinemaCon, I actually know who you can go through on that, because I've tried to get through them before, but they...
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Is this all systems broke down or what?
They CinemaCon just says, thank you, but no, not yet. But Comic-Con just says, we'll send you to WonderCon at Anaheim instead. Yeah, that's their sister.
Oh, well, yes.
It's not the same thing.
It's really not. No, it's not the same.
But before we head on out, my friend, it is Con. We should be on the south of France right now. Seeing all the stars, the movie stars are there. I mean, they left the Met Gala last week, and they're now in Cannes, in France. Your thoughts on some of the movies that have been debuting there? We will talk about the bug in the room, the elephant in the room, per se. I'm sorry, elephant in the room in Megalopolis here in a second. But the one I'm intrigued about, Poor Things, we did such a great job last year, one of the highest rated films of the year. Obviously, a lot of Oscar consideration this year for it. My gosh, back already as a debut today. Get this, Kinds of Kindness.
Oh, okay.
From Yorgos Lanthimos, the director of Poor Things. My goodness, it is getting a lot of interest for all the controversy. Again, Yorgos is pushing the envelope once again. Your thoughts on Kinds of Kindness? Emma Stone and Willem Dafoe back again working with them. Another great cast, another weird movie, maybe another success as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm here for, some of the weird cinema starting to get the nod, instead of just the old predictable stuff that we know that, like, for example, the Academy Awards tend to favor. I'm here for those kind of weird, almost art house movies getting that kind of recognition and bringing in those kinds of numbers. It's nice.
Okay. Well, I'm interested in this as well to see how it will fare. I'm assuming that this will probably debut later on this year. Will probably not, because that's an art house movie that probably will get enough advanced word. And I think, is it A24 sponsored? I'm not sure if it is or not. I don't know who's actually with that film, and I'll look that up here in a second. But I'm assuming it's going to be sent out for later this year for, as far as the awards, time for most of those movies is concerned. But one of the films I do want to talk to you about before we head on out, would Passion Project be what you would call it, from Francis Ford Coppola, director of Apocalypse Now, director of some of the most iconic films in movie history? He debuted Megalopolis, which I guess it's a Greek tragedy film. But it's set in a neo-dystopian, near-future type setting.
Sure.
It stars Adam Driver as an architect. I don't know if you saw the trailer earlier this week that they put out for it. Actually, Francis Ford Coppola, on his personal account, put it out there, debut. But yes, basically it deals with a lot of things that were dealt with during the course of the Roman Empire and the fall of the Roman Empire that they portray here in this film, reportedly. And there's also some controversy behind the scenes. I don't want to really get into that. I'm sure you heard the news articles on that already, but
of course, yeah.
The thing I want to ask you is that this was made, I don't want to say entirely, but made quite a bit off of his own personal fortune. He sold off his wine collection, all or part of it, for about to finance this $120 million film.
Yeah.
Before any marketing, before anything that's done out there, he put out and sold his wine collection. Or now, I'm not going to feel bad for him for that, because, you know, that's obviously he's going to eat. He's going to be okay.
Right. Yeah.
Whether this movie bombs or not, it's going to be okay for him. He'll be able to go ahead and, you know, take care of himself. But he is investing a lot of his life into this film. Mm-hmm. This is the movie that he said he's wanted to make for decades. Your thoughts on Megalopolis? It is a star-studded cast. Of course, getting something like this together, it is a star-studded cast putting into this. I get it. I understand this. This people are going to say this is a vanity project. They're going to say it's an ego project gone wild. I've seen the reviews. It's right now sitting in the mid-60s, so it is not hated or loved. It's right there in the middle. Your thoughts on Megalopolis? The problem is also as well that it hasn't gotten a distributor for the marketplace as of yet, outside of IMAX. IMAX has purchased rights for the film for IMAX, but for the regular theaters in the US, it hasn't done yet. I'm assuming it will at some point in time. But your thoughts on this whole interesting thing coming down for a movie that in many ways a lot of people are looking at, and one person in particular, Francis Ford Coppola, is writing a lot on. I don't know if it'll define his future or his legacy. I'm hoping it, you, whether it's good, bad, failure, not failure, that it will not define his legacy from all the other great work that he's done over the course of his life. But my God, it is a risk that he's taking with Megalopolis.
It really is. And it could be that Megalopolis becomes one of those, like, it's not good now, but in 10 years, people will find it a fantastic movie. It could be something that happens like that. It's
passed away by that time. So
yeah, no, seriously though. But like, I feel like that it's going to be that kind of a movie, like the Clue movie, for example. You know, now it's one of those movies that everybody has time for when they come across it.
Blade
Megalopolis.
Runner.
Yeah, Megalopolis could easily fall into that category. I mean, when you have Lawrence Fishburne, you have Catherine Hunter, you have Dustin Hoffman, you've got Shia LaBeouf, Aubrey Plaza, Adam Driver, those are just like the A-list celebrities that are on that list. Like, it's wild who's in this movie. And whether or not it does well, I don't know that it matters all that much. I do think this is a vanity project. Apparently, he had an idea for this back in the 70s, the 1970s. And he's managed now to get the movie made, again, by putting in his own $120 million to make it work. So I hope it does well for him. I like a ballsy move like this. I think it's great.
It's not your $120 million that you can't
believe. Sure isn't.
Be like, Francis, go right ahead. Absolutely.
Yeah, please. Absolutely. Do it. Try it. See if it works.
This is his definition.
Yes.
Of what art is. He believes film can be. He's one of those old school filmmakers. He's going to be one of those people that probably in the interviews coming up, he's going to trash Marvel. It seems like a rite of passage now that they trash Marvel. They say theater movie going isn't the same. I still think the movie going experience is fantastic. I went to go see Dune Part 2 in IMAX. I went to go see it in XD, and both those showings were fantastic. I wish I had been able to see these films or these type of films experiences in the 80s and 70s and 90s when supposedly, Melinda, they were art back then. So don't tell me it's not art now. You can put a good film on the screen. Yes, there's formulaic out there. There's repetitiveness. There's lack of creativity. But all those things were apparent in the 80s and 90s, not to the extent that they are now. But there is original stuff that occasionally bleeds its way through, or really good stuff like adaptations like Dune Part 2 and what's upcoming with Mad Max Furiosa that shine their way through. So I want to put all that aside and treat Megalopolis whenever I see it as something that I think that I should treat on its own stature. But there's going to be some part of me that's telling me, you know, Francis Ford Coppola, one of the greatest directors in movie mm-hmm. history, had to do this and had to do it his way or the highway.
Yeah, I mean, we all have that one passion project. Or, you know what, I hope that everyone finds that one passion project that they're not willing to make any compromises on in their lifetime, and they stick to it. I think it's great. And again, it's not my $120 million on the line, so I guess it doesn't really matter what my opinion is. But, you know, I think it's great. I think it's an interesting play, and I'm interested to see how the movie is received. I'm also interested to see 10 years from now, if we're looking back and we're having a different discussion on this particular film, because I feel like if it is that artsy of a movie, that's what's going to happen. It's going to become a cult thing. And in 10 years, it's going to be one of those movies that we always talk about.
It'll be interesting to see. Absolutely. Again, people didn't recognize the greatness of Blade Runner when it came out. There was a bomb at the box office. People didn't see its artistic value until directors started speaking raves about how it inspired them to go ahead and broaden the world of cinema. I'm just using that as an example. So maybe, like you said, Megalopolis and whatever it has contained within it will provide the inspiration for future filmmaking and allow them to go ahead and break down borders and go ahead and expand horizons even more in future generations. So I'm hoping it will do that as well. I'm hoping that this film, like you said, even if it is not going to do as well, and I have a feeling, Melinda, that it's not going to do as well as it should or could for various reasons, but we'll see. I could be wrong, and I hope I'm wrong. But it could be one of those things where, Melinda, you know, 10 years down the line, like you said, we look back upon it and say, you know what, this was a work of art.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've just got a funny feeling that that's how we're going to look at this one.
So what are your thoughts out there on Megalopolis, the Francis Ford Coppola? You know what, at 85, still directing. It's great that we still have Clint Eastwood directing. We still have Francis Ford Coppola directing. We still have so many other great directors in their 70s and 80s still trying to go ahead and lay their imprint on Hollywood. So please let us know your thoughts on Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis. Is this an ego project gone wild or a future moment in the history and artistic value of movie making? Please let us know your thoughts. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. Well, my friend, it's been a great episode. One last shout out for Retro City Games, Henderson, and their brand new location, which I saw today, open today at Las Vegas Boulevard Premium South Outlets. Please go ahead and check it out. If you're in the Las Vegas area, there is no better place to go than Retro City Games for all your retro gaming needs. But Melinda, any last thoughts, my friend, from you before we head on out?
Wow. Wizards and Wine, we just went through a game last night. We had a little session. Let me think what happened. They got some inside information about Lady Serena and what she is up to and what her potential evil plans could be, and just how valuable Strahd is to that actual plan. And they actually got to meet a member of Strahd's family, we'll put it that way, in a recent episode as well. So I've fallen off of editing. I'm incredibly far behind at this point. So I'm going to kick my own butt and get back into regularly releasing episodes again. It's funny, you miss a week, and then you miss 2 weeks, and then you miss 3 weeks, and before you know it, 3 months have gone by. So
that's why I can't miss a week for this show.
Yeah.
Then yeah, I have radio stations asking me, Gerald, where is it?
Yes, you're definitely much more in demand than Vampires and Vitae or Wizards and Wine, but
they want you. They want to hear more Melinda, that's why.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. Please check out all the great work that she's doing today at Wizards and Wine, Wild Beyond the Witchline, and, of course, Vampires and Vitae as well. So for Melinda Barkhouse-Ross, this is Gerald Glassford. It's another beautiful day in paradise right here in the PCC Multiverse. We thank you for listening. And here's hoping you have yourself a great day.